Do you have somebody in your life who loves books?
Somebody who not only loves books, but always wants to share what she's reading with you, thinking you're going to love her latest selection?
And inevitably, you just can't stand that book she recommended.
That's us. Mm-hmm. We both read a lot. Well, I don't even read. I listen. Although I read this time, but we very rarely agree on what constitutes a good read.
I enjoy books that build up new worlds and invite magic and mystery into our lives. Science fiction and fantasy rule.
I listen to a variety, but it's all grounded in reality. You can keep your elves and space operas.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to our podcast. You're making me read what? Your hosts on this monthly podcast are myself, Jessica, and my colleague, Christine. We're librarians who get a thrill out of a great book, but usually can't stand what the other person is reading.
We've each selected some of our all-time favorite books, and each month we'll alternate between the lists with the goal of persuading the other to enjoy a read she would never have picked up on her own.
Even a book that isn't entirely your style may have some redeeming qualities to it, right? I guess we'll see.
We will see. And I definitely am going to do a spoiler alert.
Oh, boy.
Because,
boy.
Yeah, you don't want to, if there's any chance you're going to read Midwives by Chris Bajalian, read it. Stop now. Read it. And then come back and listen to how great we both thought it was. Because there may be a suspenseful ending.
I mean, I feel like you should give people warning at the beginning that there's blood everywhere.
That is true. So that is a weird thing. Like, I'm the one that passes out at the thought of anything. And this is quite a graphic book in terms of anatomy and physiology and birth. Mm-hmm. Birth and them babies.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if you're a little squeamish, this might not be the book for you. Although, like I said, I'm the one that passes out at the thought of blood. And for whatever reason, it didn't bother me. Although, I have also never birthed a baby. So perhaps that had something to do with it.
Yeah, I had very visceral reactions to
this
book.
You did.
Right.
And I did.
Full body tremors.
I did wait to recommend it to my sister until after her kids were several years old because, you know, you could be a little close to this.
So I feel like the spoiler alert for this book is, spoiler alert, icky things happen, also the miracle of life, also more icky things, and then blood, and then sad, and then end. Does that how the book went for you?
That was wrapped up. Yep.
Yeah, done.
Done.
Book done.
Have a great day.
The shortest podcast ever. So tell me more about Chris Bajalian.
Well,
he's our author.
He is our author, and he's written a bunch of books, and I've read a bunch of them, not all of them.
Huh.
He, to me, is nobody does the ethical dilemma better than he does. He puts the reader in a situation that tests courage and moral fortitude. And they're, in my opinion, realistic situations. I don't find myself rolling my eyes going, no, this could just never happen.
Mm-hmm.
They are situations that are messy, and the people are, in my opinion, very human. And you like some parts of them. You don't like other parts of them. But you see their struggles. And I think he does a really nice job with it. So that's what I take away, what I have enjoyed from all the novels of his that I have read, is that I find myself thinking about them a week or so later, just kind of pondering, would I have the courage to have acted, or should she have done something differently, or was she giving that person a fair shake? And I like that.
So I agree that I will probably be thinking about this a week later.
But not in a good way.
But it will not be in the way that you were thinking about it. No, it will be in a way where I am distressed and kind of mad at you and also just sad.
Yeah, just sad.
And we read another Chris Bajalian book, but I do not remember the title because I didn't pull it up before we came in here.
Was Before You Know Kindness, and
Ted
actually sat in on the podcast because I was unexpectedly out. And that was another ethical dilemma where a child accidentally, we don't know, shoots her father.
Yeah.
And in this book, in Midwives, you find out pretty early in the book that home delivery has gone very badly.
Mm-hmm.
And the midwife who was there is very trusted pillar of the community.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of roots there. She grew up there. It's small town Vermont.
In the early 1980s.
Yeah. And so no cell phones, and that factors in. And she... So she's confident that she had done everything right, and yet the mom dies, and the child is saved, and she is put on trial for the mishap. One of the things I thought was interesting about it, and I think it's, again, totally realistic and reasonable, is that one of the prosecutor's problems with the whole situation is, Sybil, man, you've lived here your whole life. Mm-hmm. You should have known that the weather was going to be so bad that you had no business birthing a baby at home, especially with somebody who was not in great health. Now, the flip of that was it was worse than expected. And the mom had not been
she hadn't fully disclosed what her health issues were.
Yes. So she Sybil, the midwife, could not have known. But she was sort of sickly looking, the wife, I mean, the mom. Mm-hmm. And so I think people thought, well, you could look at her and see that she wasn't
she
super
maybe
healthy.
Just didn't go outside a lot. She was just very pale.
Right.
Yeah.
So
so one of the few things that I that there were so many pieces of this that I viscerally did not like.
Uh-huh.
And it was not the author's writing style, which was fine, and it was not his pacing or his use of words. Like, he is a good writer. I did not like the content of this book.
Yep.
And because I did not like what was happening in the book and why it was happening and all of the pieces as they fell out, I had a real hard time separating it out, the content I was reading, with what is obviously a very skilled author.
Sure. I mean, if you don't like what's going on, that colors everything.
So one of the things I liked about the book was the perspective it was told through.
Yeah.
So the midwife, Sybil, is who the book is partially about. It's about her and her choice that she made to perform what appeared to be an emergency C-section on what she thought was a dead woman to save a baby. And then this trial is about whether or not that lady was actually dead or if she killed her because she cut her open to save a child.
With a kitchen knife.
With a kitchen knife. So that, there's that. Uh-huh. But the book is told from the perspective of her daughter, Connie. Mm-hmm. And Connie is like 14 when the book starts. And it's told through her eyes and how she has heard these snippets of conversations and how she's read portions of things and how she sat in on the trial. And I liked that he used that as the storytelling vehicle.
Yeah.
Because one, it gave you the illusion of the perceived doubt that if you had been telling it from the point of view from Sybil, there would have been no mystery to it. And if you told it from the perspective of the husband whose wife is now dead and who has this child that he doesn't know what to do with,
right.
Very different perspective. But from the daughter who loves her mother, but throughout this sees the change in their family and the difficulties of adulthood, I liked that part.
Yep.
Hated the content. I did. So the first chapter opens up and it's talking about maybe the first couple chapters, and it's talking about the act of being a midwife, because this is before, you know, you get into the gory details of what actually happens the night that the mother died and the child was born. And this little girl, Connie, is talking about how her mom, you know, has from a very open age been very open at sex and sexuality and how babies are born, because that's her job.
Sure.
And I don't know. It was just too – too anatomical for me right out the gate. Like, it was just a lot. It was a lot right from the get-go. And
yes.
I was like, oh, okay, I've got the tone. That's a lot of words for lady parts. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that's that she – Connie is recounting having met her best friend or another family and saying at the ripe old age of like 8, yes, a vulva is blah, 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 blah. And just going on like that's normal. That's how normal people talk, because in her house that was how people talked.
Yeah. And it was not in mine. So I was reading that. And I was like, no, thank you.
Hello.
That's not. No, thank you. We need to back away from that conversation and use different words. And I recognize that's my own overlay.
Sure.
But also I didn't like it.
And but that totally that did get you in that mindset of this is a clinical house. And oh, and the other thing, the thing that I thought he did a really, really great job of was making sure that you knew that Connie was an old hippie and she used – I'm not Connie, sorry, Sybil, the mom, the midwife. Old hippie, and she used super flower power language and, oh, we were tripping on this and I'm totally jazzed that my kid loves blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, you didn't have contractions. You had auras.
Yes.
Because that –
because that better describes what's happening.
As someone who's given birth, I do not agree. I'm going to go with the violent words, like contraction and felt like someone punched you.
Right.
You know.
Or ripped ripped your lip up over your head.
Yes, all of those things.
Yep.
So, you know, yes, he described the mom fine.
Yeah.
I did not like the way that he chose at the beginning to depict Connie and her young friend, Raleigh.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure.
Like, they were talking at one point about they'd gotten their first periods or something like that, and about how to, you know, handle that. Mm-hmm. And the way he described it was so unrealistic. And I was like,
That's funny. I don't even remember.
I don't think so. It did not feel to me like that is the actions or the words that would come out of a 13 or 12-year-old at the time that they were talking about what
got
was happening.
Right.
And as you got further into the book, you know, her mom's trial is going on, which is a huge stressor in their family lives.
Yeah.
And they live in this small rural community in northeastern Vermont. And so, like, everyone knows everyone. So you couldn't even go to the grocery store without people stopping and staring at you.
Right.
And so she begins to rely more and more heavily on her boyfriend, Tom.
Yes. She, the daughter, Connie.
Yeah. Connie, the daughter, is relying more heavily on this boyfriend. And I don't know. There were lots of depictions and passages about their relationship. And it was either so far outside the norms that I'm used to. Mm-hmm. Like, they were talking about how Tom, who's like 15 at the time, he just didn't go to school anymore. He just hung outside the corner stop and just smoked all the time. And that Connie and her little girlfriend, who are 12 when this is going on, were trying to figure out how they could just like walk past and kind of catch his eye because smoking's so cool. And they just wanted to, you know, be in the same space with him so he'd think they were cool too. I don't know.
It didn't do it for you.
It didn't ring right for me. It didn't do it. And maybe it's the age of the book. It's both set in the 80s and it was written at least a hot minute ago. Mm-hmm. And it is certainly not the environment I grew up in where any of that would have been like, oh, yeah, of course I would go do that at 12.
Right.
Of course I would go walk however far away by myself to go hang out with a boy when I'm in grade school.
Right.
Could not imagine
right.
that.
So, yeah, I can see that. I can definitely see that.
Yeah. And again, that's just my overlay on it.
Sure.
So there were pieces in there that kept pulling me out of the story, like
yeah.
that and the – maybe it was partially the clinical, but the level of bloody details, which
yeah.
were necessary for the story, but I just – it made my shoulders creaky. I just didn't like it.
Yeah, I totally get that. I mean, I think I have said similar things about
yeah.
books that – we've read that were your suggestions
yeah.
where I was just like, I just couldn't get past the
yeah.
this part,
yep.
you know?
Yeah.
And it kept me from staying in the story.
Yeah.
So I totally get where you're coming from.
Yeah.
And I had – the funny thing is I had forgotten. I read this book maybe 15 years ago. It was a long time ago.
Mm.
And I have not reread it since until recently for the podcast. Mm. And I did not remember how gory it was. Like, I was surprised
boy.
By that. So that wasn't part of my experience with it. I mean, I do remember saying to my sister, you might want to wait a little bit, you know, but, until the childbirth trauma is really past you. She was totally fine with it. She
yeah.
thought it was great. But I remember wondering how somebody who had actually given birth would feel about this.
I didn't mind that part. Like, I gave birth like 3 years ago now, so
right.
it's mostly muted in my memory.
Right.
I think the parts that were what I am assuming realistic, and that's why they gave me that kind of irk factor,
yeah.
were, you know, the whole premise of this trial, which is the mainstay of this book, is did Sybil kill this woman?
Right.
Because she thought she was doing the right thing. She, in the moment, thought that her patient was dead.
Right.
And that the baby inside of her had a chance to still be alive.
Right.
And so she took action. No matter how gory it was.
And it was beyond the scope of her expertise.
Yes. She did not have a medical license. She
right.
should not have been performing C-sections.
Right.
But it was the early 80s. There was no way to get in, no way to get out. What was she going to do?
Right.
She thought she made a choice to save a life.
Right.
And as the story progresses and you keep getting these details layered in about what the husband saw.
Right.
And what the apprentice midwife saw.
Right.
And what then how the prosecution and the other lawyers portray what they saw.
Right.
I don't know. Like, I don't watch horror movies. I
didn't
want to keep replaying it, but I get why we had to in this book to layer in, did it happen? Did it not? Did it happen? Did it not? We don't know.
So that is one of the things that I really liked about it in the sense that these tiny little details that you in the moment don't think are pivotal end up being a huge deal. Like, one of the things is Sybil, the midwife, never says to Asa, the dad, do you want me to save this child?
Yeah.
And apparently, if she had said that, that would have taken all responsibility out of, or, you know, guilt or whatever off her hands, because he said, yes, that's what I want.
Yeah.
And in the middle of an emergency where you think a person has died and she had just performed CPR on her. Mm-hmm. So you also see that, like, to me, there's no doubt that Sybil was trying to do the right thing, had the patient's best,
interest
in her heart.
Yeah.
But she was not a doctor.
Nope.
And so I just thought it was an interesting, like, setup of, wow, something that I didn't even – it never occurred to me to ask, do you want me to save this kid? Because who's going to say, nope, I want the kid to die, right? Mm-hmm. But if he said, no, I can't care for a second kid by myself, or no, I can't bear to see you – you know, cut into my wife, no matter if she's dead or not.
Yeah, or let's try CPR for 20 more minutes.
Sure. Right. So I actually like those kind of, like, something that you don't think is an issue becomes this big issue. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with the fact that she didn't listen to or didn't pay attention to the weather forecast. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are always things that we can look back on and go, yeah, you're right. Wow. Mm-hmm. Or my shoelace broke. I should have worn loafers. You know, like something so inconsequential that all of a sudden.
A little butterfly effect.
Yeah.
Everything affects everything else.
And I think he does that well.
I agree that he did the material that he was working with and the storyline that he was moving forward, he did it.
Yeah, yeah.
I just didn't like it.
Yeah.
Like, I got to the end of the book and I was just sad.
Yeah.
Because it didn't matter to me if she had been convicted or not. Spoiler alert, she's not.
Right.
But it didn't matter to me because it was just, the whole thing was sad. The whole circumstance was sad.
Yeah.
So it would have been sad if the mother had died and the baby had died.
Right.
It would have been sad if she had gone to jail. It was sad that she didn't go to jail because there's always someone who's going to be hurt in this situation.
Yes.
So the family of the mom who passed away is heartbroken at the end of this trial because they don't feel like they got justice.
Right.
And the dad, who is now a single father to these two kids, is just trying to piece together his life and move on. And so what was a victory for her wasn't a victory for everyone else,
right,
even though they're the main protagonist family in our story. And you know how my reading patterns, I want to escape.
Yeah.
I want to think about something else.
Yeah.
And if a book is full of dragons or aliens or, preview to next month's book, Talking Ravens.
Sure.
I know it's not happening here.
Right, right.
So I don't have to worry about it because it's happening somewhere else. And this one, like, you know that things like this can happen and that those ethical dilemmas are happening to us every day. I don't want to read about it again.
Yeah.
I got enough of that in real life.
Yeah, I totally get that. And that's I had to stop reading stuff like this during COVID because I had too much like real life happening. I did not need any more stress. There were two little snippets. I think Bojalian is a terrific writer. Mm-hmm. Just his command of the language is excellent. I don't think there's not a lot of fluff. There's not a lot of extra stuff. He's a nice, tight writer.
Agreed.
And one of the things just tickled me because not only I thought the writing was appropriate, but the idea was great. At one point, Sybil says, I once read somewhere where work takes up as much time as you can give it. If you give a job 30 minutes, for example, you'll get it done in 30 minutes. But if you can give it an hour, it'll take an hour. And I think that is super true. I've never really thought about it that way. Yeah. But you are one of the most quick, like, you make me feel like I work in slow motion and I am not a slow motion worker. So you are just unbelievably fast and also good at details. And I just felt like that is probably where your mind is set. Like, I've got 6 minutes to do this. I'm going to do it in 6 minutes, even if it's a 15-minute project.
Oh, I appreciate the compliment as your way of trying to get me past having read this book.
Oh, there'll be no getting past it. I understand.
No, there were definitely interesting aspects to this book. And there were pieces where I saw myself connecting it to other books that we had read.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, like, one of the this wasn't even a decision point, but it was this, like, minor underlying theme, which was, okay, Sybil is going to be charged with this crime against the state because the state attorney general's office is doing it and then they
because it's criminal, right?
Because it's a criminal offense. Or that's what they've decided it's going to be.
Right.
And so she and her husband are trying to figure out how they're going to pay for defense. And, you know, it's a very light series of statements in the book about, okay, well, I've never had to write a check that big in my life.
Yeah.
But that's just the down payment to get them started. And how are we going to pay for this? And mm-hmm. what are we going to do? It's like half the value of our house.
Right.
And that little piece of reality, you know, that piece and the portion about how you form a jury, mm-hmm. the portions that were in the legal aspects of it, I liked, I think, a little bit more mm-hmm. because they weren't so bloody.
Yeah.
And also because they're things that you can both relate to as an individual and separate yourself from a little bit like, oh, I didn't do that, so I'm going to pay $25,000
right.
for a retainer fee right. in 1982
right.
to, you know, support my criminal case. But those little pieces that went along, I thought they tied it together really nicely. It wasn't – it didn't have to be a part of the main storyline.
Right.
It kept moving little pieces forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, the way that they were trying to pick who was going to be on the jury. Mm-hmm. And so they were talking about, well, it doesn't matter if it's a man or a woman because, you know, we're not trying to pick people who've had babies or who haven't had babies.
Right.
But we probably don't want anyone of an age that could have a baby.
Right.
So we only want young people or old people. I was like, huh.
Yeah.
Okay. I buy that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of strategy. And
yeah.
and the attorney even admits when he's like, well, it could go either way because my colleagues are trying to talk me into this, but mm-hmm. I think it's that. And so mm-hmm. it is sort of interesting to get into the strategic part of it where this is his job. Mm-hmm. This is not his life. And yeah. and he obviously develops some feelings for Sybil.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. And I what did you think of our narrator? Is quite the little spy. She mm-hmm. does a lot of positioning herself so she can overhear mm-hmm. and listen to stuff that she's not supposed to be listening to. And then she has to figure out, do I back away slowly? Do I mm-hmm. duck? Do mm-hmm. I? How do I not get caught?
Do I steal evidence so that my mom doesn't go to jail?
I mean, that's always an option.
It is. Yeah.
So what did you think about that?
I was fine with that part.
Yeah.
Kids are tricky.
They are tricky.
They're tricky little kids. I didn't question that part. And also, She was made in this book as a device to carry the story forward.
Sure.
So she had to hear all these conversations and right. find a way to move things forward. So it made sense.
Right.
But also the way that he framed her as a character about, you know, living in a rural area, having more independence as a child, mm-hmm. parents who are old hippies, mm-hmm. it made sense that she would be maybe a little bit more independent and willing to go out and find that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I didn't like the aspect of that she knew it was wrong. She was old enough to know that what she was doing was disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
And
she still did
she
it.
Did it anyway. I didn't love that.
That rang true as a teenager. That part I bought into full-heartedly. My child's only 3 and I would buy into that part.
Oh, poor Hannah.
No. No, it was – that's why I said the further into the book it got, the more I was like, okay, like I don't like the content. I
yeah.
don't like the content, but I get where you're going.
Yeah.
And the characters felt more true than at the very beginning.
Okay.
So like the further in we got, the more maybe the motives made sense to me for both Connie, the daughter, and for the dad as he was trying to kind of do his own research into the law because he could see that the lawyer was flirting with his wife.
Like, right.
Those parts were all fine. So at the very end – So the whole story is, did she do it, right? Did she kill this lady?
Was the woman still alive,
yes.
technically alive? She was passed out. Mm-hmm. She was non-responsive.
Mm-hmm. Did the midwife think she was dead
right.
as she finished her cesarean to pull the baby out?
Right.
And the conclusion we came to was like a shoulder shrug, like, because, you know, she had kept these personal notebooks and she had wrote down her own recollections. And then as the story progresses, you see more and more of these pieces of the notebooks at the beginning of the chapter. And the very end was her recollections the day after.
Right.
Where did she see the body flinch? She doesn't know anymore.
Right.
I don't want to. Like, just tell me. Just tell me.
That is so funny because I think I'm usually – we've switched places.
Yes.
That's how I usually
yes.
am with the magic part.
Yes.
Like, this is too ambiguous. I can't get past
it.
But
it's magic. It's supposed to be ambiguous. Mm. Somebody's
See,
dead. I want to know the answer.
This is life. Life is always ambiguous.
They went through a whole court case. I deserve to know.
You know what the jury thought.
I want her to sign it in blood.
So – and that was an interesting thing, too. Tons of legal advice about, oh, well, if the jury comes back and they don't look at the defendant, mm-hmm. then that means you are sunk because if they make eye contact with the defendant, that means that they don't think that person's guilty. And yeah. so Connie has like a little mini breakdown.
Mm-hmm. At the beginning and end of the book.
Yeah, yep. it ties it all around.
Mm-hmm.
where she just loses it. She has to be escorted out of the courtroom, so she doesn't even hear the verdict.
Yeah.
But she is 125% sure that her mom's going to be convicted because no one will look at her. And they're all looking at either the judge.
Or the clock.
Or the clock or the other family.
Mm-hmm.
And so she knows 100% mm-hmm. that. And then it turns out that that's not. So I think I like that because you can have all of these rules and all of these, wives sayings or whatever.
Yeah.
And then it goes a different way.
It does. And now it's done.
And you loved every second of it.
I
read it.
I love every second of podcasting with you.
Look at that.
We're recording in February. I had to say something nice in the month of Valentine's.
That's true.
Yes.
Well, are you going to
punish
keep
you?
That kind of love alive, or are you going to punish me?
A little bit both.
Hmm.
Yeah. So the book that we're reading next month, I enjoyed very much, and I will be heartily surprised if you enjoy it even a little bit. But it's such a weird book, and it's not really like anything we've read before, so I thought we should at least give it a chance.
Okay.
So we're going to read Hollow Kingdom by Kira Jane Buxton. B-U-X-T-O-N, I think.
Okay.
It is an apocalyptic book, which is not usually my style. I don't like zombies. I don't generally like the world is ending types things.
Is that because you are – I believe you once told me I don't like zombies because I know they're real.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I will not live anywhere but a coast so that I can get on a boat and get out if I have to.
Got it.
Yeah. You're not going to trap me inside of like a mountain range.
Okay.
So I don't believe they're real right now, but I believe they could be.
Potential.
So zombies kind of freak me out.
Okay.
But this book is told through the eyes of a pet raven.
Sure.
And it's totally anthropomorphized. Like this is the main character. This is the voice that we're following. And it's as his Purston, is going about his daily business. They're hanging out outside with the dumb dog that his person dad keeps. And then his eyeball pops out.
As it does.
And his human person doesn't seem really freaked out by that. So the crow picks up and he puts it in the cookie jar just in case the guy needs it later for safekeeping. And so the dog doesn't eat it. And then as the story progresses, the crow, whose name is ST, comes to realize that something is wrong with all the people in the world, whom he calls mofos, because that is what Big Jim called them all.
Sure.
So something wrong with mofos.
Mm-hmm.
And he needs to figure it out. So he and the dumb dog have got to venture into this brave new world.
Well, I think your assessment is correct that I will not like it, but I will enjoy figuring out why a bird brain is what we're seeing the world through.
They're just really smart. Yeah.
That's they're called bird brains for a reason, Jessica. Mm,
I will talk next month about how that is inaccurate because there are many smart birds out there. But in general, I know you're not going to like this. I already know. It's fine. It's just so weird. I had to at least put it out there.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the warning, and I will still read it.
Okay.
So thank you for joining us on You're Making Me Read What?
Even if this book wasn't your cup of tea, there are millions more where that came from.
And don't forget, you can always grab these books and lots more at your local library.
So please join us next month when we will be discussing Hollow Kingdom by Kira Jane Buxton. Thank you, and keep on reading.